Phil Mason Show. Phil Mason Show is on. Is on in five. In five. Four. Four. Three. Three. Two. Two. One. One.
Welcome to the Phil Mason Show. I'm happy to have you here. Today we're going to talk a little baseball. Rich Baxter will join us to talk Philadelphia Phillies starting lineup, potential starting lineup, I should say. And after that, Michael Oehler from Pounding the Rock and I will have a very interesting debate about George Karl, Tim Duncan retiring, and take a look at the 12-11 Spurs against 500 teams. What does that mean playoff-wise? A lot of fun. But up first, we got lots to talk about NBA basketball-wise, and joining me from WelcomeToLoudCity.com, please welcome Zeb Benbrook to the show. Zeb, man, how are you today? Welcome to the show.
Doing great. Thanks for having me on again.
I love having you on. We get so many nice things. People say nice things about you. They like your name. You know why? Because it just reminds them of Zeb Walton. It really does. You know what? After the first time that you came on my show, I downloaded from YouTube one of the Walton shows. That was like one of my favorite shows growing up, man. No, because you're the same. You have the same personality as him. Laid back. You tell it like it is. You raise your voice. You're just a good dude. But I got to tell you, Jason Collins, he made his debut in the NBA, or I should say he's been around a long time, but he's finally back in the fold with the Brooklyn Nets. He signed a 10-day contract on Sunday, and he played on Sunday. What did you make of it? Do you think this is all overhyped? Because on my blog, I said, you know what? The bottom line is he's no different than Dexter Pittman. He's living out his dream 10 days at a time. What did you make of all this?
Yeah, you know, I really do think that it's overhyped because, I mean, it's different when you're crossing something like a racial line as opposed to like a sexual orientation line, because when you're on a racial line and you've got the first black baseball player in Jackie Robinson or whoever, I mean, when he steps on that field, he is going to look inherently different than almost every single person in that stadium, because all the players are going to be white, all the stadium's going to be white. He's literally going to be alienated through that, and everybody's going to give him funny looks, you know. There's going to be things like that. But when Jason Collins, I mean, Charles Barkley has said it 1,000 times, we've played with gay players before. He's not the first gay player. He's the first openly gay player. So it means a lot to us, the public, because it's like, oh, hey, we know this guy. We know this, you know, we know that there's, you know, this stuff going on in locker rooms. But I mean, to guys who have been playing for years and years, it's totally meaningless. I mean, there's nothing you can visibly look at Jason Collins and say like, oh, that guy's different. You know, there's something weird about that guy. You can't really do it, you know, because you can always hide your sexuality. Now, that's tough for some people, and I'm not denying that. All I'm saying is that there have been gay players in the NBA before. Nobody's going to give Jason Collins any crap. I give him a lot of credit for what he did. And I'm, you know, I'm glad that people are going to be able to just, you know, talk about this and accept this, and we can, you know, move on and, you know, talk about real basketball instead of stupid issues like this.
Exactly. You made a tremendous point. He didn't break any lines. He didn't, you know what, he wasn't discriminated against in any way, shape, or form by the NBA. Whereas Jackie Robinson was not allowed to play, or African Americans. That's why they had a Negro League. And that's what I was trying to tell people a year ago. To compare the two is completely wrong. You know, good for him. I don't subscribe to that lifestyle, but that's their business, none of mine. The bottom line for me has always been this: can he play? And Jason Collins went out and did what Jason Collins does. He fouled hard 5 times. He set a couple real bone-chilling screens, one of them on Jordan Farmar. And he got a couple of rebounds. That's what he does. He plays great defense for the time he's in there. And if they think he can stay and help them, then he'll get a contract. But it won't have anything to do with what he does in the bedroom, because at the end of the day, these guys won't care. Will they make wisecracks? Probably. He's in the same locker room with Kevin Garnett. But he was in the same locker room with Kevin Garnett before. And when people were comparing this to the Michael Sam thing, it's not the same thing. First of all, Jason Collins knows all about the NBA locker room because he'd been there for about 10 seasons. He knew exactly what he was going to face the second that he came out publicly with it. He knows all about it. He knows who's probably not going to like him, and he knows who probably will like him. He also knows the bottom line is, if I can go out and play, no one's going to care. And why should we? But congratulations. I admire anyone who has the courage. This is the real courage to go out there and put it all on the line for 10 days, trying to prove they can still remain living out their dream. And I take my hat off to him. God bless him. Good luck. And we'll have to see. He's playing on the wrong team, but that's neither here nor there. If he were playing for the Knicks, I would probably really enjoy myself more. But he's not. Anyhow, speaking of the Knicks, Raymond Felton, Zeb. My man, Ray. As reported by, here, this is what ESPN provides details given out by a police spokesman. Felton was charged with second and third degree criminal possession of a firearm, which are felonies, and fourth degree possession of a firearm, which is a misdemeanor. Further details of the weapons charges are not known at this point. Apparently, this happened Tuesday night after the basketball game. When did this happen? This had to happen last night, right?
Hours
after the team just lost to Dallas. And here's what Larry Salona of the New York Post provided. Further details, alleged arrest was made after Felton pointed a gun at his wife, Ariane Raimondo Felton. Raimondo Felton is known to have filed for divorce after just 19 months of marriage. So we have a domestic dispute, and who knows what really happened. The end of the day, Raymond Felton is not a very happy camper, and he's probably not the smartest guy out there. We already seen that when we watch him play. But what do you make of all this? Is he going to get suspended by the NBA?
Well, here's a list of players that I can remember that have had gun charges in the past. Javaris Crittenton, Gilbert Arenas, and Sebastian Telfair. None of those three guys are really anywhere today. And I think that kind of shows to you what kind of stigma gun charge can kind of carry for somebody who's in this league, you know. I mean, he's had a label placed on him before. He's been in Portland, you know, where he had a whole bunch of chemistry issues with the entire team. Now he's in New York. He's not, you know, he's not doing any sort of good for the team. They're losing constantly. There's locker room troubles. And now he's got this gun charge styled on him. He's got a whole bunch of problems if he wants to continue playing in this league because his production's not that great. You know, the team's not doing that great. And you need to produce well if you're going to start trouble like that. And he started that trouble. And, you know, I'm not going to make any comment about what he did to his wife or why he was holding around that gun. I mean, that's just dumb. I mean, it's not a gun control issue. It's not whether you think guns are right or not. It's whether you're responsible in handling a gun. There's no reason that you should ever point a gun towards another human being unless you're a cop or a soldier. So it's sad what happened. It's sad that he did what he did. And if he wants to get his career on track, he's got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, but you know what? He's probably going to go to prison too. Because in New York City, they do not play when it comes to guns. And boy, oh boy, what a bummer. This is what happens when you marry the wrong person, folks. These issues and this is stupid. And I'm not talking about him. I'm talking about her. How you pull a gun on your wife, man? If that's what happened, of course. Oh, my own. What a mess. And, you know, the thing is they had lost it. Heartbreaker to Dirk Nowitzki. And I'm still wondering if Dirk Nowitzki called it before he banked that winner. But a friend of mine said he was mumbling something to Carmelo Anthony before he shot. So maybe he did call bank. But it is a crazy thing, man. It's an absolute crazy situation down there in New York, and it's not getting any better. And boy, oh boy, they don't need any more of this trouble, do they?
No, I mean, I think it's kind of a similar situation to the Wizards when Gilbert Arenas had that gun charge, because they were kind of in a downward spiral at that point. They were dealing with injury issues or whatever. And then that was just kind of the breaking point, and everything just kind of fell apart. And I think that, you know, with this loss to Dallas and with a couple of, I mean, that was a great game winner, by the way. It was absolutely one of the best I've ever seen, just because all the Knicks fans were so excited when it hit off that rim. And then they got so angry when it came back down, or so disappointed. I mean, it just the biggest tease that you could ever possibly have. But anyway, I think that the Knicks are going to have to start. You know, there are going to be guys who are going to want to shut it down for injury reasons. You know, they're going to have to start looking towards the future and looking what they can do next season. because I mean, there's just not much hope at this point, because you know they're losing the games they need to win. When you lose Raymond Felton, I mean, you know, what else do you have? So yeah, it's a bad situation.
And they're going to probably buy out Bino. So it is awful.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, they got Bino, and you know what? It's not a good thing. But I'll tell you what, I'm pretty hard on Carmelo Anthony, as you know, but he played a fantastic basketball game against Dallas. And it just goes to show, you can score all the points in the world, play great defense, if that's what he did. Pass the ball, which he actually had 4 assists, rebound, and still lose. Ech, boy, what a mess in New York. It's pretty embarrassing, to tell you the truth. But it is what it is. Now, the Golden State Warriors. What's going on with the Golden State Warriors? They are probably doing not too shabby. They've, what, won 5 in a row? Four in a row. And they have a big game on Wednesday against the Chicago Bulls. Then they have the Knicks, Toronto, Indiana, and Boston. They're on their crazy road trip. What do you make of all that? Do you think they're going to be all right?
Man, I really hope that they're going to be all right over the next week. I mean, there's just a lot of questions surrounding this team. I mean, we've just gotten a couple of wins, but you know, there's just more questions than answers, because right now, you've got Jermaine O'Neal performing on such a high level, and you love to see that, because Jermaine O'Neal hasn't played a complete season in his entire career. He's been basically done for 4 or 5 years. Not done in the sense that he couldn't produce on NBA floor, but he was done in the sense that he couldn't produce so many points on a regular basis. Now he's getting a little bit of that cardio back. He's getting a little bit back into shape, and he's able to, you know, be an East-West player and score, you know, on each end. And he's doing really well, doing a really great defender, but you know, you can't bank on him. You can't bank on him scoring like that. And you know, if you're not going to have him doing that, then you're going to have to rely on Lee and Bogut again. And they're always inconsistent. Bogut isn't the good scorer that you need him to be. So, you know, there's definitely like a lot of, tough tension surrounding what's coming up next, because you just don't know how well Jermaine O'Neal is going to perform. And then last night, Mark Jackson put in Jermaine O'Neal next to Andrew Bogut, and he played a two center lineup and then went small and played Draymond Green at center. It was really strange. You know, he was kind of experimenting with both, and then he just kind of ended up going with the traditional lineup and beating the Nets, I believe it was last night. Or no, not the Nets last night. It was another team. I forgot.
Pistons.
It was Detroit. It's Detroit. Yeah, it was Detroit, because they play against Drummond and Monroe. And it was so weird, because Drummond and Monroe aren't the crux of Detroit's offense. So why do you put two centers on the floor? Something that's almost never been done, unless your name's, you know, David Robinson and Tim Duncan. And Tim Duncan's plays more like a power forward anyway, you know, to try to, you know, beat this team, because Jermaine O'Neal's 35 years old, and he's a power forward. He's a center. He can't play power forward. He's not that mobile, especially in today's game. So it was kind of a really weird situation last night with the coaching. You don't know what, you know, if he has a clear strategy, if he knows what he's doing, because he's just tried so many different things and he just doesn't seem to know what works against certain teams. So, that's always a big concern. And, you know, if he can kind of just find a way to slot everybody in, if everybody can get healthy, if Bogut can get off the injury, if Lee can get off his sickness or whatever, then we can be really good, because we just got 2 point guards in the back. We got, I know I'm talking about a lot, but we got Steve Blake and we got Jordan Crawford just recently from trades. Blake is a really smart point guard, solves all our ball handling issues. So, you know, there's a little bit of anticipation, a little bit of tension. Really excited to see how it turns out. And I think that we can definitely get a high seed in the playoffs, especially with the new acquisition of Steve Blake. It just depends on the coaching decisions.
Yeah, I think it was interesting too, but they won. And that's what matters. At the end of the day, they won. And, you know, you have to try to do what you can do against those two big kids, Drummond and Monroe. And Mark Jackson did what he did. Anyway, Zeb, great stuff today. Thank you so much for being on the show with me.
Thanks for having me on again.
All right, that was Zeb Benbrook, and you can find him over at welcometoloudcity.com. Coming up next, Rich Baxter and I will talk Philadelphia Phillies baseball, and we'll be right back. You're listening to the Phil Nason Show.
The Phil Nason Show will return.
And it's the reason Al Gore invented the internet.
After these brief messages.
Do you know your fantasy sports? Would you like to make money at it? DraftStreet.com and The Phil Nason Show would like to help you get started making money playing fantasy sports today. And we'll even give you the chance to get started making money today for free. On me. That's right. All you have to do is head on over to PhilNasons.com or visit the show notes for this show. Click the Draft Street image at the top of the page and start making money playing fantasy sports at DraftStreet.com today.
If you like baseball, you should be checking out BaseballPodcasts.net. It's one of the best places you can go on the internet to listen to independent baseball talk shows. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on our radio player that can be heard around the world. So won't you tune in and give us a listen at BaseballPodcasts.net. You can also listen to the great Phil Nason show here. See you there at BaseballPodcasts.net.
Are you looking to escape into lands full of fantasy, drama, and adventure? If you are, why not try author Kay Metter's books? Their Journey Begins, Journey to Freedom, The Night of the Dixie Wilds, On Top of the Rainbow, and Transcendence will get you there. Kay Metter's books are available as an ebook or in paperback, and you can find her at authorkmedor.com. That's authorkmedor.com.
Riveting talk radio.
Everybody get up.
People cannot get away from the internet.
Well, I think it probably comes from porn as well. You know what I mean? That's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Talk radio. Bend over, baby.
That was great.
Brewtown Sports is your source for Brewers news and notes. Join Mr. Brewtown as he keeps you up to date on all the happenings of your Milwaukee Brewers and Major League Baseball. Follow the show on Facebook and Twitter, Brewtown Sports. Listen 24/7 at brewtownsports.podomatic.com.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station, this is Epix Radio. Listen online, www.epixradio.com.
Hi, this is Phil Nasons from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nasons Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now, back to the Phil Nason Show.
What a dope. What a maroon.
What is this? What's going on here? What are you people doing here?
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. The Philadelphia Phillies have a pretty interesting batting order, possible rotations, and we're going to talk about that. But first of all, they've gotten themselves, if the allegations are true, in a bit of hot water. And to join me to discuss all that, please welcome from FightinPhillies.com, Rich Baxter's in the house. Rich, how you doing, man? Welcome to the show.
All right, Phil, how are you doing today on this lovely weekend here we're having in the Philadelphia area anyway?
Yeah, I'm doing great. It's Saturday evening. I got all my grocery shopping done for the week, and now I'm just recording Tuesday's show with you, and we're rocking and rolling. Anyhow, interesting story from Baseball America. Aaron Fitt is the reporter for Baseball America. And in this report, it accuses the Phillies of turning in fifth-round draft pick Ben Wetzler to the NC2A, claiming the pitcher violated NC2A rules by hiring an agent to negotiate a contract with the Phillies. Well, I tell you what, this is all an allegation, by the way. But either way, Ben Wetzler is not pitching for his college baseball team. He was not allowed to pitch for the Beavers this year because of this situation. And I was wondering, what do you think about all that? Because if it's true, this could be a public relations nightmare, right?
Understandably so. Right now, out of the official word coming out of the Phillies, General Manager Ruben Amaro Jr. has declined any further comments about this report, from, as you said, from Baseball America. And basically, at this point, I would have to think that this is Baseball America's claim. Whenever something like this happens, there's usually a couple sides to the story. So right now, I would have to side with the Phillies and Ruben Amaro as the general manager and saying, you know, he's not going to comment on it because it's an ongoing investigation. And right now, it appears that, you know, what would the Phillies have as their motivation to turn in a pitcher or any other player for that matter? Right now, the Phillies had drafted Wetzler, and he was drafted in the fifth round in last June's MLB draft. So the Phillies were interested in this gentleman. They wanted to bring him on the team. And for whatever reason, everything has blown up around it right now. So pending the outcome of the investigation, I would have to say for right now, I would have to side with Ruben Amaro and his declining comment. And I think we need to wait till all the facts come out in the story, basically.
Yeah, I think you're right. The one thing that I do know is that most, if not all, prospects have representation because these teenagers need representation. They can't just negotiate contracts on their own. And, of course, because he was still in college and drafted, and that makes it for an interesting situation, which brings up the old adage, should they declare as professionals and then leave college and then be drafted? It is getting drafted, not getting what they want, and going back to school. I don't know if that's such a good idea. I think they need to tighten these rules up a little bit.
Exactly. And we don't know at this point whether or not it was the Phillies. We don't know if it was Wetzler himself who actually signed with an agent and had that agent representing him at the time that the Phillies drafted him. So it's a very fine line. As you said, there's a tightrope that an organization is on, the player is on. If he seeks the advice of a professional agent, that he may be on that tightrope as well. So there's a number of different interesting combinations of mistakes that can be made along the way. And as you said, Phil, a pitcher who is young, he's in his early 20s or not even 20 yet. Sometimes we all remember how it is to be young. It's difficult decision on what to do at that age.
Well, that's exactly right. And I think they do deserve representation. But if a basketball player does it, he's automatically out. A football player, the same. So baseball works differently because some of these guys wind up getting drafted three different times. And you have to wonder who's helping them negotiate when they're in high school. I mean, if you have an agent in high school, obviously, you shouldn't be pitching for your college team. It's just against the rules. So I think it gets disregarded a lot. And it is what it is. And it'll be interesting to see how this all shakes out. But what I'm more interested in today is looking at the potential batting order for the Phillies. Mm-hmm. They look pretty good. They look pretty quick on top. You know, Ben Revere and Jimmy Rollins, they have good speed, and I think that's going to be very helpful for this baseball team because this baseball team needs to score runs to win, right?
Yes, they do. Last year was an abomination for the offense. They finished where they did primarily because this offense could not get going. So, yeah, that's the theme of this year. Pick up that offense. They have to score more runs, pick up their batting average, and basically become that team that they used to be before that disastrous last season. And they picked up a couple guys that seemed to be able to help them in this. Number one, Ben Revere will be back. He will be out in center field, your starting center fielder for the Phillies. And he's a guy that came onto the Phillies from the Twins originally, and he struggled for the first couple months of last season. He seemed like he wasn't going to make it, to be honest with you, the first two solid months of the season and into the third. And then he all of a sudden got acclimated to the Philadelphia team and the way they do business, and he changed into a different player. He was an energetic player that charged the offense and really invigorated the team for the most part. He's back healthy this year. He'll be leading off in your number one spot of the batting order. And then we've had longtime Philly shortstop Jimmy Rollins, who has held that number one batting position for many years. He'll drop into the number two spot to give the Phillies a good, quick 1-2 punch on the bases. If either one of those guys can get on, then we'll lead into our third batter here, probably batting third for the Phillies, Chase Utley. And we all know that Chase Utley's very capable. He's an experienced second baseman, and he's a great hitter. He's a good situational hitter for the Phillies. And joining the Phillies again after injury last season and the season before that is a healthy Ryan Howard, batting in the cleanup spot for number four. Howard, of course, playing first base for the Phillies. And he's a guy that got the job done for the Phillies when they needed it back in 08, 09. The injury bug has slowed him down a little bit, but Howard is going to be the go-to guy to clean up those bases. And I think he's going to be healthy. He wants to make a good contribution to this team, and he's stated many a times that his goal for the season so far is at least, you know, approaching the 40 home run mark and over 100 RBI. So the first four guys of this Phillies lineup and their starting batting rotation, I think you can see that they have a very capable bunch so far, Phil.
Absolutely, but there are big question marks around that capable bunch. Revere did very well last season. In fact, toward the end, he ended up leading the team in batting average last season, and that's a big thing for him. But I'm more concerned about that four hole with Ryan Howard. Is his Achilles going to hold up? That's a tough injury, and not a lot of guys can come back from it. Hopefully he can, because he's a very important part of the Phillies. And the guy I really like on this team is Dominic Brown. He's slated to bat fifth, right?
It'll probably be a toss-up between Dominic Brown in the fifth spot and Marlon Byrd at this point. A lot of people have penciled in Byrd as your early favorite. As you said in our previous show that we did together, Phil, Byrd really excited the Mets, and he also excelled with the Pirates. He had a career year last year, and if he can continue those type of numbers, you may see him up in the fifth hole, and he might even challenge Howard if Howard struggles early out of the gate for that cleanup spot. So I think the odds-on favorite for your fifth batter at this point would have to be Marlon Byrd. He'll be playing in right field for the Phillies this year, and he solidifies that position for the Phillies out there. In previous years, they've had different players alternating in right field after Jason Worth left, and they really need to have that solid guy in that spot as your go-to guy. They've been platooning different players with a gentleman named Darren Ruff over the years between right and left field, and he'll probably be coming off the bench for the Phillies in a bench role, and God forbid an injury role if Byrd should suffer an injury, or Dominic Brown. But Dominic Brown would be your sixth hole batter at this point. He'll be stationed out in left field. And he's a guy that really turned it around last year for the Phillies. A lot of people were very high on Dominic Brown for many years when he first came up with the Phillies. And he never really lived up to his potential of being that quote-unquote superstar, But last year, he really turned it on. He got a home run streak that was very enviable. He was on the All-Star team for the Phillies, representing the Phillies. And he really ran with his opportunity. And it's kept him in this starting roles job here as we go into 2014. Dominic Brown finishing up in your sixth spot. And after him, I think you'll see either Cody Ash, who should be our starting third baseman. He's pretty new to the Phillies. He's got one season in with them so far. But he's a player that the Phillies are pretty high on for doing well. He's got some power, and he's got the determination, and he knows what it takes to be a major league player and stay it at third base and anchor it down for the Phillies. So we'll have to see if he can do that this year. And I think he would occupy your seventh spot, and then maybe Carlos Ruiz, the Phillies catcher, will probably be in tandem with him as far as the seventh and eighth hole for the Phillies, of course, with their batting order, and then you have your pitcher being ninth.
Yeah, it seems like a solid lineup, but that 4, 5, and 6 holes, those are going to be the ones that are going to either make the Phillies or break the Phillies, I think. Marlon Byrd, yeah, he had a very good year last year, but can he do it again at age 38? That's a big question mark. Dominic Brown's my guy. I have big hopes for that kid. I think this is going to be the year where he definitely demonstrates what he's capable of doing for a full season. Incapable of backing up all the hype that's been behind him for years, I guess. And again, yes. Howard, I like Carlos Ruiz. And Cody Ash, you know, he's okay, but this is still an old team, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a team that's well built to win this year. If the Phillies do not win this year with this team, I think you see a major implosion happening at the end of the year. But we have to play this season out first. There's been so many reports of how, quote-unquote, old the team is. But these guys, a lot of these guys are in their prime right now. As you said, Marlon Byrd is 38. I remember Raul Ibanez at 38. The Phillies had him out in left field, and I was like, oh, God, you know, they're hiring an old guy to play left field. He practically carried this team on his back for several seasons. Ibanez showing the greatest side of his batting when he was with the Phillies and afterwards. He even did well with the Yankees, and I believe he's in a camp now with Baltimore or somebody like that. But he's like 41 years old now, and he's still playing like he's somebody in his early 30s. But the Phillies have that tag on them as being older. They do have some younger kids coming up in the mix, but the Phillies have that one advantage in them, and they've been to the postseason before, the core of the team. They know what it takes to win, and it's just a question of them putting together this combination, this chemistry together, have that winning attitude that last year a lot was said about the Phillies' chemistry. You had Jonathan Papelbon going to the press. He was upset. He came here to win. He came from the Boston Red Sox, and he came right out in the press and said, you know, it's the Phillies' chemistry. We didn't have that tight-knit chemistry. There was a lot of, with the blame game, a lot of, you know, why wasn't this done? Why wasn't that done? But the interesting thing is recently Cole Hamels also talked in the press, and he agreed basically with Papelbon without saying as much that he said, yes, it was a chemistry issue last year. And that's a important part of a winning ball club. If you can straighten out the chemistry, stay healthy, all pull together as a team, you're going to have a good combination, hopefully. And I think these guys are in the greatest shapes of their lives, perhaps. Yes, their career is at the pinnacle right now, but it's by no means at the valley. So I think you're going to see a different Phillies team this year than we did last year. The Red Sox were able to do worst to first. I think you might see the Phillies doing near worst. Maybe not to first, but I think you might see them make the playoffs this year.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. Great stuff today, Rich. Thanks for being here, man.
Hey, I appreciate being on your show, Phil, and love your new fantasy show out there as well, the Fantasy Baseball Weekly. I encourage all the listeners of your Phil Nation show to check that out as well.
Well, awesome. I appreciate it. Thanks so much. All right, that was Rich Baxter, and you can find him over at FightinPhillies.com or over at BaseballTalkRadio.com, where you can listen to independent baseball broadcasts 24 hours a day. Coming up next, Michael Erler and I will be talking San Antonio Spurs hoops, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
The Phil Nason Show will return.
And it's the reason Al Gore invented the internet.
After these brief messages.
Hi, this is Phil Nasons from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nasons Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
Hi, this is Gary Mack of Mets Musings, and I hope you'll join me each and every week as I recap all of the comings and goings on in New York Mets baseball. I'll have guests on from all across Mets Nation giving their insights and analysis on the New York Mets. And you can follow me on Twitter at MetsMusings1, as well as on Facebook. The group name is Mets Musings. So tune in weekly to the Mets Musings, available at MetsMusings.com, Stitcher.com, iTunes.com, iHeartRadio, and of course, BaseballTalkRadio.com, the home of great baseball talk shows.
Riveting talk radio.
Everybody get up.
People cannot get away from the internet.
Well, no. I think, and it probably comes from porn as well. You know what I mean? That's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Dog radio. Bend over, baby.
That was great.
Are you a fan of historical fiction? If you are, then why not try author Mary Ann Bernal's The Briton and the Dane series of historical fiction novels. You can purchase these novels from her website at www.maryannebernal.com. That's www.maryannebernal.com.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station, this is Epics Radio. Listen online, www.epicsradio.com.
Do you know your fantasy sports? Would you like to make money at it? DraftStreet.com and The Phil Nason Show would like to help you get started making money playing fantasy sports today. And we'll even give you the chance to get started making money today for free. On me. That's right. All you have to do is head on over to PhilNasons.com or visit the show notes for this show. Click the DraftStreet image at the top of the page. And start making money playing fantasy sports at DraftStreet.com today.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now, back to the Phil Nason Show.
Now here it is, your moment of zen.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. Here to join me to talk about George Karl's comments about Tim Duncan possibly retiring and other Spurs news, please welcome from PoundingTheRock.com, Michael Erler is in the house. Michael, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing great, Phil. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Now, this is the former Aaron Stampler. He's using his real name now on everything he does, which I think is a great thing. Anyhow, George Carl said some things on ESPN this past weekend, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to let the folks listen to what he said, and then we'll talk about it, all right?
Sure.
Position right now in the NBA, and then what about Tim Duncan? Are we perhaps looking at his swan song?
You know, over the weekend, that was the whispers that I got. I got a couple phone calls, one from San Antonio that said that Tim Duncan's thinking this is going to be his last year. The best, most fundamental big guy ever to play in the NBA. And he leaving would make me very, very sad. The San Antonio Spurs without Tim Duncan would be very difficult for me to watch.
You get the feeling that when he does retire, it's just going to come out and that's going to be it. No fanfare, I'm done, and he's going to walk away from the game.
No question about that. He's a no-nonsense, low-maintenance NBA star.
Look into your.
All right, so what did you think? Now, you wrote an article about this statement. What did you think about this whole thing with George Karl? And what was your, why were you so irate over this 30-second snippet?
Well, I was upset about it on two different fronts. I mean, number one and most importantly, I don't think there's any basis of truth to it. I think whatever source Carl has is either feeding him a bunch of baloney or, you know, and that they don't know, because I happen to believe Tim Duncan when he says that he doesn't even know for sure if he's going to retire yet. So, I mean, he has a contract for 2 years. I mean, you know, there's another year to go on it. So I don't necessarily think he's going to retire. So I have a problem just with Carl sourcing more than anything else, because, you know, I don't think Tim Duncan is the kind of person who would announce something like that to anybody, really. I mean, his teammates, his coaches, anybody. I just think he's a kind of guy I think that would keep it private, and I think the Spurs are the kind of organization that would keep it private. You know, their beat writers are, you know, never seem to know anything secretive about what the Spurs do, whether it's trades or, you know, free agent signings. Things always kind of happen, you know, close to the vest with that team, and they're very good about protecting their secrets. But and more to the point, I think if it is something where even if there is truth to it, you know, Carl and Popper are pretty good friends. I think Pop would feel kind of betrayed for, you know, that breach of confidence and making something like that public when, you know, obviously Tim Duncan really wouldn't want it made public. And I just think it created an unnecessary distraction for the team for a couple days. And I just don't think it's the kind of thing that either Greg Popovich or Tim Duncan really appreciate. And I know, George Carl, his job at ESPN, you know, when you have a job like that, a national job, you kind of have to, you know, validate that job, validate that paycheck by showing that you still have some connections in the league, that you're plugged into what's going on in the league. But I just think the Spurs are the kind of, you know, wrong team, to be leaking info about, especially if, you know, as Greg Popovich has alluded in the past that he's friends with George Carl.
Okay, well, he never really said he got it from anyone from the San Antonio Spurs. What he said is he heard whispers from San Antonio. Someone contacted him. Now, a generous way of looking at that would be he did what all of us do. He talked to one of his buddies in San Antonio, and they were talking about it, hey, speculating about it privately, and he just mentioned it. You know, that's one way to look at it. But then, you know, honestly speaking, George Carl spent 25 years in the NBA. You think he doesn't have contacts in the NBA? Do you think he needs to prove that he still does?
Well, no. I mean, I think he has contacts. I just think as far as this bit of information goes, the only people who would know, if anybody does indeed know, would be those directly inside the Spurs organization rather than, you know, some media person or you know, somebody in San Antonio feeding them stuff that they themselves would not know.
Yeah, that's fair enough, but maybe that's what happened. Maybe he was just talking with someone and they decided it's possible. I've talked to people privately about my belief that he'll probably retire at the end of the season. But in and of itself, it is what it is. But when you say Pop is friends with a lot of crappy coaches, are you insinuating that George Carl was a crappy coach? Because I would definitely disagree with you there.
Well, I mean, it depends on your definition of crappy coach. I think the better term to use, I mean, maybe I was trying to, you know, engage in a little bit of hyperbole in the article or whatever, but I think he's an overrated coach. In fact, I think he's a tremendously overrated coach. I'd put him in the same category as Don Nelson, quite frankly. Just some guy who puts up a lot of 50-win seasons, you know, in the regular season, but just consistently gets out-coached and, you know, underachieves in the playoffs. I mean, last year the Nuggets were the 3 seed. The Warriors were the 6 seed. The Warriors lost one of their best players in David Lee and still upset the Nuggets in 6. And, you know, I didn't even think it was an upset. I predicted the Warriors to win that series just because I didn't have any faith in George Karl's coaching. I think his style, especially in Denver, has been just, you know, all offense, no defense. And that fast break style, it wins you a lot of games in the regular season because, you know, teams, you know, aren't used to the elevation. But once it comes down to the playoffs and games slow down a bit, you know, his style just doesn't work. And he just has trouble adjusting the series. I think the Nuggets, they're kind of famous for once they lose, you know, a game or two in the playoffs, they just get discombobulated. And he never got it done with the best talent in Seattle either. I mean, ultimately, he only made 1 finals. And, you know, and then they lost to the Bulls. Well, you know, you can't blame them for losing to the Bulls, but I can blame them for not making more finals than they did with that team. And, you know, this was they got upset by the number 8 seeded Nuggets 1 year when they had the best record in the league. So I think his teams have consistently underachieved in the playoffs.
Okay, those are all fair statements. But when you talk about underachieving, and let's just go back to his Denver years. In 2005, he lost to the San Antonio Spurs. So he got out-coached, but he also, the Spurs had all the talent in the world, and who ended up winning the final that year. So you can't really blame the coach because they didn't win. Now, against the Clippers the next year, okay, maybe you can say they got upset, but it is what it is. The following season, they lost to the Spurs again, who won the final. Again, I don't think he was I don't think there's anything that he could have done to stop that. Then they lost to the Lakers, who ended up going to the finals. And then they lost again to the Lakers, who were in the finals and won. And then they lost to the Jazz, who weren't that bad of a team. And then they lost to OKC, who got to the conference final. And then they lost to the Lakers, who lost to OKC, who ended up going to the finals. And then the game against, or the series against Golden State is what it is. You know, the Golden State Nuggets, or Golden State Warriors, just shot the ball like lunatics. I mean, you can't always blame the coach for that. So he wasn't getting out coaching every one of these series, or maybe he was. But it's a lot easier to coach Tim Duncan than it would be to coach, say, I don't know, Ty Lawson?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of times the guys they get are the kind of guys that Carl wants to get. I don't think Carl has necessarily, for whatever reason, been able to function with a superstar player. I mean, look how it went with Carmelo Anthony. And I know you're going to say Carmelo Anthony's not a star, and I'm not a biggest Carmelo fan either. But, I mean, you could point to the opponents all you like. The bottom line is, in his entire Nuggets tenure, he only made it out of the first round 1 time. And I think, I mean, even the 1 year he did do well against the Lakers, you know, they went to the Western Conference Finals. I think they had a better roster 1 through 12, but they just didn't get it done. They had a 2-2 series, and then they kind of imploded, especially at Game 6 at home. So I just think he should have been more successful than he was. And I think George Karl was one of those coaches where, you know, Pop would send a limo, you know, to the airport to make sure he got to the arena on time.
Well, as I just pointed out to you, 6 of those 9 straight playoffs that Denver made it to, they lost to either the eventual champion or the conference finalist. So I just have to disagree with you. I think what happens with him is, well, what happens with Greg Popovich, for example. A lot of people say Greg Popovich is stubborn, too, and does things his own way. You said it yourself. Game 6 last year, for example. That's how Pop coaches. It is what it is. It didn't pay off for him, but it usually does. Of course, the San Antonio Spurs have Tim Duncan and Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili, too. I don't think he's been blessed with that kind of talent in Denver. And I would never say that Carmelo Anthony is not a star. What I've said is not a superstar, and he doesn't make his players around him better. He's not a team player. That's what I say about him, and I say about him that same thing every week. Now, real quick, a lot of people are talking about the Spurs, and they're saying things, and these aren't whispers, these are out loud, you've read them, that they don't do very well against top competition. They're 12-11 against teams over 500. What do you make of all that? Is there a problem coming up in the playoffs?
I don't think so. I think it's – I can't remember the last time this team's had their full squad. I guess you'd have to go back to early January against the Clippers. So January 2, I think, was the last time they had their whole team together. They've just been, you know, set by one injury after another. You know, right? They're expecting Kawhi Leonard to finally be back after 5 weeks tomorrow, but Tony Parker is still going to be out. But Ginobili, he just returned, but his hamstring is still looking a little balky. They haven't quite been able to ratchet him up to his usual 24, 25 minutes just yet. Thiago Splitter is just coming back into the fold. You know, Danny Green's been back for a while now. But, you know, it's going to take them a while to find their form. And I think for most of the year, they just haven't had everybody. Like, for example, against Oklahoma City, two of the three games they've played Oklahoma City, they were without their most important guy against Oklahoma City and Kawhi Leonard, because, you know, he's the only guy who could really check Kevin Durant. You know, Kawhi missed one game outright against them, and the other game he played like 8 minutes and then broke his hand. So, you know, it's been bad timing. And I think they've missed a number of guys against a number of teams. They have, early in the year, the first couple of months, they have been a little disappointing at times against the top teams. They have underachieved a little bit, but I think ultimately, you know, you have to judge the Spurs by what they do in the playoffs, because I remember last year, the last 40, like, I think it was the last 40 games of the season, the last 30 games of the season, they were a 500 team. You know, they really limped into the playoffs down the stretch, and some people were even picking them to get upset by the Lakers without Kobe. That's how bad the Spurs were limping down the stretch. And then they just went on a roll once the playoffs started and, like, tore through the Western Conference like a hot knife through butter, you know, and took Miami to the absolute limit, you know, and almost won the series. So you never know with the Spurs. They've had runs where they came into the playoffs red hot and then fizzled. And then they've had times where, you know, they took off the last couple of months and, you know, and just, you know, did well in the playoffs and went on a big tear. So I think for them, the most important issue is just getting all their guys back, being healthy, and developing some kind of rhythm with them.
Yeah, that's fair enough. The one thing about the Oklahoma City series, which they're 0-3, by the way, and you mentioned that Kawhi Leonard was out, and that's fair enough, but Oklahoma City was without Russell Westbrook, correct?
Two of those games? For one of the games. One of those games, I believe.
Either way, so I think it's going to be very interesting coming up. We'll see what happens, that's for sure. I don't even know what really to say to people. I think that they're 3-0 against Memphis, and Memphis will probably be their likely first-round opponent, perhaps, maybe Dallas. And against Dallas, they are, 2-0 this season so far. So I don't think I would worry too much about the Spurs just yet. But it ought to be interesting come playoff time. If they don't get a chance to play much together, some of these guys, and they haven't, that's going to cause problems, I think.
Well, I will say the one thing that's hurt the Spurs this year that I've noticed is that a few teams have been copying Miami's formula for what they did last year, where they forced the Spurs to go small and really kind of like took Thiago Splitter out of the game, because Miami used to be the only contender, you know, that could play that way. But there's quite a few teams in the Western Conference now that either play small or play with stretch forwards, you know, got power forwards who could get out there to the 18 feet, 20 feet. And, you know, and make jumpers, and that really gives the Spurs some trouble. Whether you're talking about LaMarcus Aldridge in Portland, you're talking about Terrence Jones in Houston, you have Serge Ibaka in Oklahoma City. These bigs who can get way far away from the basket, where neither Thiago Splitter nor Tim Duncan can really cover them. That gives their defense some problems, and it kind of forces the Spurs to play small. And once the Spurs play small, you know, to adjust to that, then it kind of opens up the lane and teams go to the basket against them more. So it's kind of a pick your poison deal. And I think teams with stretch fours, you know, can really exploit the Spurs in that fashion.
Good stuff today. Thank you so much for being here, Michael.
Thanks for having me.
That was Michael Erler, and you can find him at poundingtherock.com. And that's going to wrap it up for today's Phil Nason Show. I want to thank all the guys for making this a fantastic afternoon of NBA and MLB talk. Tomorrow we're going to do the full hour, Major League Baseball. Until then, y'all take care of yourselves. Be good, and most importantly...
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you, my father thanks you, my sister thanks you, and I thank you.
You've just listened to a pre-recorded edition of The Phil Nason Show. If you'd like to contact me, you can do so at philnasons.com. If you'd like to advertise, you can do the same. Contact me at philnasons.com. Like us on Facebook. or follow us on Twitter. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.